This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the January 25th, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today to welcome Bob Braunstein to join the party this morning. Bob is a former federal employee, retired federal benefits specialist, fellow seminar presenter, good guy. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Bob. Good to be here, even though here is Florida and you're up there.
Well, okay, if you, if you insist on reminding me of that. Anyway, but Bob and I have known each other for a long time. He's very smart, along with his bride. They moved to Florida. and Andrew and I are sitting up here, Andrew, the ever-efficient engineer, wondering why. So we're going to talk about what? New health care, dental and vision plans, TSP futures, increased pay, da-da-da-da. We have a lot to talk about. I wonder if it'll all fit into our allotted time.
So we'll have to shoehorn it.
Okay. Well, please turn on the flashlight and lead us out of the dark.
All right. Well, there are a number of things that happened effective in 2021. Many people took advantage of the last open season, made changes to their health plans. So those are starting in January, and it's important to understand some of the things associated with those. We're going to talk about new ID cards, what to do if you didn't get them, how to contact HR or OPM if you're retired. We're going to talk about flexible spending accounts. There was a rollover increase for healthcare flexible spending accounts. Otherwise, they haven't really changed too much. The CARES Act. This is a big theme that we're going to talk about with respect to things that happened in 2020 because of the virus. If you're not familiar with what the CARES Act is, it's the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, which governed a lot of things that people were able to do, for instance, with TSP, with leave, that they weren't otherwise able to do because of the impact of this virus. And there was also a Families First Coronavirus Response Act. And some of these things led to additional sick leave, additional annual leave. We're going to talk about those things. TSP launched a brand new program. We won't get deep into it because it's quite lengthy and complicated, but it's called their new spillover feature. And spillover has to do with the way you contribute to TSP for regular contributions and how you now no longer have to make separate contributions for this catch-up feature, which we'll talk about. It just spills over. And last but not least, pay raises. There was one for federal employees. There was one for retirees. And believe it or not, the age wave of retirees that's been long predicted, looks like it might happen this year and open up quite a few jobs for people who are going to be around and are still moving up the ladder. So that's in essence what we're going to talk about. Before I get started, did you have anything specific that you wanted me to absolutely delve into, Bob, or should you just
move along, ideas will come into my head. I'll give you the ones that make sense and hold the other ones for later. But I did want to mention the ad, if you will. It's not an ad for today's show. It's actually got a lot of information in it. I mean, it's three pages, but we will talk about, I'm sure, a lot of it. But again, for the folks that maybe goes, really, where do I get that? Go to the website, NITPINC.com. NITPINC.com. You needn't be anxious about going into the website because the firm in 35 years has never sold anything other than seminars to the federal government. So we're not capturing to sell you anything. Again, it's priced right. Download it for free. Anyway, Bob, spotlight's back on you.
Okay. Let's talk about some of these open season effective dates. Anyone who changed plans or enrollments in federal employees' health benefits, federal employees' dental vision insurance program, or designated different amounts for their dependent care and healthcare flexible spending accounts, it's important to know what the effective dates of these changes are. So for those of you who are still working, if you made changes in your health and dental insurance and flexible spending accounts, you see the premiums for those coming out in the first full pay period in January 2021. If you're retired, of course, you don't have pay periods. After all, that's why we retired, so we don't have to have pay periods anymore. becomes effective on January 1st. Now, for those who changed plans, oddly enough, you know, I'm always amazed. We make a big push to get people to review their plans each year. And about 7 or 8% change, because you can find a deal that might be better for your health, that could also be cost effective, one way or the other, or both. If you did change plans, you're probably waiting for new ID cards, or you might have gotten them. But if you haven't gotten them and you're working, you want to contact your human resources office and ask them to find out what date and what the carrier report number was on your enrollment information, when that was forwarded to the new insurance carrier. So on what date was the carrier report number on your enrollment information forwarded to the new carrier? If you went from, say, Blue Cross Blue Shield to Aetna or whatever. And with this information, the new carrier will be able to locate your enrollment data and forward the ID cards to you if they haven't gotten them to you already. They may just be late. Now, if you're retired, you want to contact your plan. And if they tell you they haven't gotten the paperwork yet, you can contact OPM. A lot of people will do that. You contact OPM online at retire@opm.gov. retire@opm.gov. Just like when you contact them for anything else, if you're retired, one of the things they're going to need from you is your CSA or CSF number. This is the number that essentially is your annuity account number, depending upon what plan you retired under, whether it was civil service retirement or FERS. They're going to need that information, so have that with you at all times. Chances are they've already sent you an annuity card, or for those of you who have been retired for a while, when you get that statement at the end of the year, remind me, Bob, that's a 1099 what?
1099R, R for retirement.
That's it. The 1099R that comes from OPM is going to list your CSA or CSF number. Also, make sure you have your phone number, address, Social Security. They're going to need that. Again, they're usually little hiccups earlier in the year. Many of us have already received our cards if we've changed. And of course, for the majority of us who didn't change plans or even change enrollments, everything's copacetic and it just continues into the next year, albeit with a slight increase in plan cost. Overall, about 3.6%, but each plan might have a different change. Some went up, some went down. If you're interested in a factoid, there are 276 health plans. And among these health plans, 18 of them are national, what they call fee-for-service plan choices, available to just about everybody. Four are available only to certain groups. For example, the Foreign Service Health Plan is not available to everybody. There are 254 HMOs, which is phenomenal. Those are those regional plans. You go to an HMO, they're self-contained. You see all of your providers in one place. You generally don't even get billed, small copays. Very attractive for people who, you know, have their universe in one place and don't travel too much. There are a number of high deductible health plans too. If you're not familiar with those, high deductible health plans have within them health savings accounts. And health savings accounts allow you to put money in pre-tax to pay for medical expenses. And the plan contributes $1,000. You could actually put up to $5,300 in if you're family or self plus one, and a little bit more if you're over the age of 55, and use it for medical reasons, tax-free. Use it for other reasons, pay the taxes. There was a new plan, one big new plan. I haven't looked at it too much. It's called United Healthcare Advantage, and that's available to everyone in the 48 contiguous states. It's apparently getting some pretty good reviews. It's worth looking at if you haven't done that. There were five new regional plans in a variety of different places. I don't want to bog down too much, but they were in Washington, Idaho, North Dakota, Wisconsin. Let's see, plans being terminated. This is important. There was a plan called Blue Cross Blue Shield of California Standard, HealthNet of California Standard, and a consumer-driven health plan, Universal Benefits, several others that were canceled. just as a word of note for anyone in a situation where your health plan was canceled, you should have had the option, and it should have been made very clear to you during the open season that you could have changed to any plan you wanted to. And if you forgot to do that, you were automatically, I use the term defaulted, placed into something called GEHA Elevate, G-E-H-A Elevate plan, a good plan. So you're not out there in the cold, but if you didn't make any affirmative action to change, then you were put in GEHA Elevate. Those in the GHI HD HP plan who wanted to continue enrollment in their plan or make additional contributions had to change to a different health high deductible health plan.
May I ask you a question, Bob?
Yes.
What is a consumer-driven plan?
Consumer-driven health plans usually have extremely low cost. they're there for basic catastrophic benefit. They have health reimbursement accounts. And health reimbursement accounts essentially pay for things that you would otherwise have to come out of pocket for. They are, I would say, I want to call them plans for the young. High deductible health plans are for the young, for the old who want to make additional contributions that could be used for other than health-related reasons. But they're driven by the need of the consumer, and they typically have high deductibles, high cost-sharing amounts, but they do have health reimbursement accounts, and definitely recommended for folks who are not seeing the doctor that often or don't have major issues. Oops.
All right, thanks.
Yes, not a problem. There was someone on my front door. All right, let's talk a little bit about the impact of this virus, COVID-19, on health plans. All of the federal health insurance providers in the Federal Employees Health Benefits System have been mandated to implement certain plan features that aid federal employees in, you know, staying safe. And they're required to waive any cost sharing. Cost sharing is a term of art. It means deductibles, co-pays, co-insurance, all of that has been waived for anything having to do with diagnoses or testing as part of the virus. You don't need prior authorizations for diagnostic tests, covered services. There's no no cost sharing for any of these things, no free no refill limits on prescriptions, no co-pays for telehealth services provided by Teladoc. So no matter which plan you're in, even the vaccine that's being rolled out, that should all be covered and free of charge. So that's important, extremely important for everyone to realize that you don't have to worry about any of those things. The CARES Act is going to take care of it, and you shouldn't be billed for any of those features. All right, let's talk a little bit about federal employees' dental and vision insurance and flexible spending accounts, because they have some new plans that came out too. Again, if you took the opportunity to review your dental and vision plan last open season, you might have found out about these plans. People are always asking too, what is the most popular dental plan that's out there, for example? And I think pretty much Delta Dental leads the pack. MetLife Dental has some popularity too. Many of these plans are popular because of good coverage on particularly Class C services. Now we're talking about dental restorations, crowns, bridges, even implants that are deemed medically necessary to save or otherwise support other teeth are covered by these plans. You have to write it up the correct way. So it's good to look at that. New dental plans that have been added, something called Health Partners Dental PPO. And there were new standard regional plans in Minnesota, North Dakota. I'm not going to go through all of them. United Healthcare Dental was new. MetLife Dental was new. What's important about about dental and vision plans is that if you have issues, if you have things that are going on, it's probably a good idea to be enrolled. If you're just getting exams, not really that necessary. But if you are getting dental restoration works, like crowns, for example, you can easily have 50% of those costs covered, in some cases more. I'm down in Florida, and the dental plan that I have under FedBIP actually, I'm under a dental PPO, preferred provider organization, and Crown's that up in the Northern Virginia area that were costing me $1,600 down here about $500. Bridges, much less. And the plan that I'm under, which is MetLife Dental, also will give you 70% reimbursement for an implant if the implant is necessary to save your tooth. So that's extremely important.
All right, could we take a moment to keep our people happy that sponsor the show?
Yes.
WEPA, so let's listen to what WEPA can do for the listeners.
Federal open season is over, but there's never been a better time to reevaluate your life insurance coverage. Get life insurance for less with WEPA. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal employees for more than 75 years. WEPA can be used as a supplement or replacement for your existing policy and can cost less than Fegley. In fact, last year, members who switched saved $375 on average. Although open season is over, you can apply anytime for WEPA Group Term Life Insurance. See how much you can save by visiting WEPA.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here with Bob Bronstein, retired Fed, fellow seminar presenter, guest rock and roll star, benefit star on the radio. And if you didn't hear the beginning part, what do you call it, Bob? The velvet tones of Bob Bronstein.
Well, I always call them the dulcet tones of Bob Lyons, but we have a mutual admiration society. What can I say?
Okay. So at the break, we've gone through different plans and you explained, and I guess there were regional issues and the like. Beyond federal employee health health plan, is there something called FedVIP?
Yeah, FedVIP is Federal Employees Dental and Vision Insurance Plan. And what's important to understand about FEHB, Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, and FedVIP is that they are separate. They have coincident open seasons, but occasionally I will get a question during a webinar or a seminar is that in order to meet what's called the five-year rule to be able to take Federal Employees Health Benefits into retirement, can I be simply enrolled under FedVIP and maybe have some other private plan in the health arena? And the answer to that question, unfortunately, is no, because dental and vision coverage is not the same as health insurance. Some health insurance plans do have some modest dental and vision coverage, but FedVIP is separate and apart, not to be confused with, and doesn't even have the five-year rule to carry into retirement. The five-year rule, for those of you in the audience who don't know about it, who aren't ready to retire yet, is that in order to take federal employees' health benefits with you when you retire from federal service. We're talking about a retirement that's immediate. You leave the government, you're retired, you start getting checks from OPM. You have to have been covered under your federal employees' health benefits system, one way, shape, or form or another, for at least five continuous years before you leave government, before the day you separate. Five different plans, all kinds of different enrollments, but there has to be a continuity of coverage. That's the big difference between health insurance and dental and vision coverage, because dental and vision coverage, you don't have a five-year rule. Dental and vision coverage, during open seasons, you can enroll and disenroll and then enroll again the next open season. Can't do that with federal employees' health benefits. By and large, once you're in it, you're in it. You got to be in it for at least 5 years continuously before you retire to take it with you. And then you don't really have the opportunity to disenroll. There are rare occasions where it can be suspended in lieu of something else, but you're not really disenrolled.
Can I ask you a question, Bob?
Sure.
If somebody has to have worked in the federal sector for 5 years and participated in a plan, the question I would have then is sometimes political appointees come in, et cetera, and let's say that they work 5 years or 5.5 years, they would still be entitled to an annuity and these great health benefits?
It just depends on how old they are. Now, once you have 5 years in civilian service, creditable civilian service, you technically are you use this term a lot too. It's called vesting. You're vested in your pension plan. Now, what vesting means is that you would eventually, even if you left the government before you qualified for an immediate retirement, you'd be able to get what's called a deferred pension or deferred retirement down the road. Typically, with 5 years, you're eligible for a deferred pension at 62 years of age. So if you had a political appointee who was in his 30s or in her 30s or 40s, and they work 5, 6, 7 years, and then because the administration that they served is now gone, as is their job, they've got that vesting, but they would have to come back to work in a federal capacity and be at the right age to be able to retire immediately with the health insurance and other benefits. If you simply leave before you're eligible to retire, then it doesn't go with you. So that's the key. These benefits are only available to people who retire on what's called an immediate retirement, which by definition means my last federal workday is immediately followed by my first federal retirement day. In some cases, that's not going to be the case.
Thank you.
My pleasure, sir. All right. So let's look at some critical things associated with that wonderful flexible spending account that you might have for dependent and healthcare. As a retiree, I really long for the days when I had flexible spending accounts because it lets you put money aside for things that, you don't get coverage for in your health insurance. Might not get coverage for with dependent care either, with a tax break for kids or whatever. It's extra money. I mean, it's your money. Comes out of your check every 2 weeks. But at the end of the year, and you're the tax guy, Bob, this is not part of your adjusted gross income. Is that correct?
Right. Adjusted gross income for those who are going, what's that? That sounds obscene. gross income is dividends, interest, et cetera, that would be taxable. Some types of interest is not. Some types of dividends are not. It would be your taxable salary, et cetera. So all this goes into kind of like a blender on your 1040, and eventually it winds up on one line, gross income. So that would be your salary after the thrift, again, interest income, et cetera, other types of maybe side business and the like. So all that goes on the return, but eventually it comes into like a neck and a funnel and go, okay, that's my gross income before I get to claim deductions and things like that. So whenever you hear somebody talk about, well, this is an adjustment, this is a this or that, don't get lost in it. Adjustments are a tax deduction of sorts, actually better than a tax deduction, where charitable donations, mortgage interest are itemized deductions. Again, it all plays in together. Probably the first time any of us looked at return, including me, and I go, huh? Mom, Dad, how do I do this? Well, they didn't know either, but so I learned. Anyway, sorry, Bob.
No, I'm glad you did that diversion because I like going off on tangents with you, and every now and then I've got a question for you because you talked about adjusted gross income, and now I understand that, but I'm getting questions, and sometimes I'm still confused. As you're probably aware, people who are paying for Medicare Part B essentially pay a premium amount that's based on modified adjusted gross income. And they ask me what that is. And I keep telling them, well, it's everything, including the lemonade stand. But I know there's a more technical definition of that. So can you enlighten me? What is modified adjusted gross income?
Okay, again, gross income is everything you can imagine and then some. But some of that has to be pulled out. It would be modified because it doesn't meet tests, et cetera, for what you do on your return. If you've ever noticed on your return, some of the things beyond the income are impacted by the size of your income, itemized deductions, et cetera. So it would have a component part there that would modify it.
Hmm.
I did that 1,000-mile view. If I dug way into it, people would hang up.
Well, let me just verify this for me. What about interest that you get on non-taxable assets? Is that part of modified adjusted gross?
Well, it never got in there. So it just
got it.
What you're talking about probably is somebody's involved with a state bond or a highway bond or something. The interest on that isn't subject to tax at the federal level and generally not at the state. The reason I say generally, if you live in, say, state X, but you bought a bond in state Y, well, state X doesn't want to give you a tax deduction for it, so it modifies it.
Got it. Okay. You're right. I don't want to get too deep in that. I'm already my hair already hurts, to use your term. Okay. Let's talk about what's happened with flexible spending accounts. Annual contribution limits remained unchanged. For dependent care flexible spending accounts, that's still at $5,000. For those of you who are married, you can only have one family dependent care flexible spending account. You know that. But each one of you could have a healthcare flexible spending account. Again, limits haven't changed, but the HCFSAs, the healthcare flexible spending accounts, increased their carryover of unused money from $500 to $550. So that's something. You have any money left over at the end of the year, it can now be $550, and that rolls into the next year against those expenses. Now, some critical dates to remember. December 31st, 2020, the day before this year began, was the last day to incur expenses for your healthcare flexible spending accounts for the year 2020. January 1st, 2021 is the beginning of the new flexible spending account period versus the first pay period when you're having that first deduction for what you committed to pay during the open season. Just remember, the plan year begins on January 1. Now, different from flexible spending accounts for healthcare, if you have a dependent care flexible spending account, the last day to incur expenses for last year's DCFSA is actually March 31st, 2021 of this year. Now, for both of these plans, HC and DCFSAs, that's once again healthcare and dependent care flexible spending accounts, April 30th of this year is the last day to submit all claims for the 2020 period. There was one very important waiver last year, which rang true for many people because there was a time when you were able to do this without physician approval. And it had to do with the purchase of over-the-counter drugs. You could buy as much Sudafed or aspirin or Tylenol that you wanted to until a few years ago when it was basically stated that you can't do that anymore unless it's really medically needed and you almost need a script for it. Well, last year, because of the virus, that was waived. But it's important to understand we're now in a new year, and effective January 1, 2021, you no longer get that waiver. Your physician absolutely has to approve over-the-counter drugs. That's important. Okay?
Okay.
Let's see.
How about TSP? Well, we're about 6 minutes before the break, but the changes in the bullet points you had here for the TSP?
Sure. There was many people who took advantage of this already know that there was an expanded withdrawal and loan opportunity for 2020, some of which may continue. To get a little bit more specific, you were able to suspend your obligations on loans for calendar year 2020, and this applied not only to existing loans but loans that were taken between early 2020 and November 30th. The maximum amount of loans was increased from $50,000 to $100,000, or if you don't have that much in your TSP, up to 50% of your available balance, from 50% of your available balance to 100%. You had to make application for those loans by September 22nd, and you were forgiven payment for those loans throughout the year. Now, the loan repayment begins once again. You're back on the hook for making loan payments effective January 1st of this year. You were also allowed to make a one-time withdrawal of up to $100,000 from your account. Even if you were below what would normally be the required age to do that without penalty, which while working is 59 and a half. When you retire, it's 55. And for some special occupational categories, it's even as low as 50. You were able to do that. You avoided penalties. and you were given the opportunity, and this is where I may need some of your help, Bob, to spread out the tax liability associated with those withdrawals for 3 years. So you took the money out in 2020, which would mean that you have, I guess, a third of the taxes due on those types of withdrawals for tax year 2020. Is that correct, Bob?
Correct. Correct.
But, and then, but, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
With regards, when you withdraw money from the thrift, it comes from wherever the money might be in the thrift. So if it's all in X fund or Y fund, then it would all come out of there. If I'm not mistaken, if it's in more than one, it comes out pro rata of the funds. Am I right with that?
I believe you are right.
Okay.
What if somebody took money? Were people allowed to take money out of Roth to do this? And would that avoid taxes altogether?
Well, it depends on their age. So they probably don't want to take it out too quickly. So they could, but given the opportunity, I think I want to take it out of the Roth last because it's just sitting there percolating tax-free until you really, really need it. Now, if you really, really need it and it's not an opportune time, then that's the source of money.
Hmm.
But I would look at, taking money out of the thrift is easy. And it's not like going to a credit union or a bank and say, gee, I'd like to borrow some money. You don't have to go through there, and the interest rate is low. But if they went elsewhere, that's where I'm going. I don't know. If that money's coming out of the C fund, because that's where all my money is, I think I might want to borrow from the credit union because I'm making a lot more in the C fund. Now, I'm getting into finance and tax and stuff, and I probably should be quiet and listen to the expert talk about bennies.
Okay. Well, one of the biggest bennies that came out of TSP was a new, what they call, spillover program. For those of you who are eligible to make catch-up contributions, and technically you become eligible in the year of your 50th birthday, or if you're older, that means in addition to regular TSP contributions, which for last year and this year remain at the same grand total of $19,500, that's also known as the IRS elected deferral limit, if you are making that amount of contribution and you wanted to do these things called catch-up contributions, which again is another $6,500, the same as 2020 as it is in 2021, you had to fill out a separate TSP form. The TSP 1 is for doing regular contributions, and the 1C is for catch-up. Well, lo and behold, you're no longer going to have to do that. If you're eligible to make catch-up contributions in the year 2021, you just start making your contributions, and when you hit the IRS elective deferral limit of $19,500, and congratulations to anyone who can put that much money into TSP. Then you have the additional $6,500 automatically spills over into the catch-up account, and you don't have to make a conscious application to do that. So that's a nice feature, whereas before it had to be separate. Remember that the matching money is only on the contributions you make on the regular side of your account. And they don't match the whole $19,500, of course, but the government gives you 1% of your salary automatically. They match the first 3% that you put into your TSP, 3% of your salary, dollar for dollar. And then the next 2% is matched 50 cents on the dollar. You, of course, can put your money in on a traditional or tax-deferred basis, or depending upon where you are and what your financial advisor tells you to do, you can put the money in on a tax-loaded basis. These are known as Roth contributions, whichever is right for you. And I certainly am not the person to tell you what's right. It's important also, however, to note that whatever the government matches to your account, that's always tax-deferred. So if you did the whole career doing nothing but Roth contributions, eventually you would still have some money in your account that would be taxable. That's important. So be mindful of that. The TSP spillover feature, once again, if you're turning 50 this year, and if you're at the point where you can make the maximum contribution to TSP, make sure that you not only invest it well, but also understand that you no longer have to positively elect catch-up contributions. Those are going to be spilled over automatically. So that's the real, that's the big change.
Okay.
Some of these, yeah, go ahead, sir.
Let's take a break and let the folks listen to what NITP, the sponsor of the show, and Bob and I both work for NITP, and see what the listeners can learn.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Well, welcome back to the final leg of today's show, January 25th, 2021. Bob Braunstein, fellow seminar presenter, retired Fed, knower of all things federal, is hitting the final, not final lap, but we're, what do we got, Andrew, 15 minutes? Andrew says 15 minutes. All righty, Bob.
A lot to cram in. And you're continually making me blush when you say I'm the knower of all things. I'm always learning. So let's talk about some things that expired but were very important last year, once again related to COVID-19. Emergency Paid Sick Leave Act, abbreviated EPSLA. Interesting. This actually gave employees for use between, I believe it was April and the end of last year, 80 additional hours of paid sick leave. Now, as you all know, everyone earns 104 hours of sick leave each year. But largely due to the virus and whether it affected you or family members or others, the government was giving you or gave you an additional 80 hours. So be mindful of that. It had to have been used last year. And it was in addition to the regular leave ceiling. It also, the legislation also updated what's called FEMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, gave workers more job protection, paid leave when they couldn't work. Even contractors, who normally don't get sick leave at all, if because of the virus were unable to get to their job sites, the agencies that they worked for were allowed to give them sick leave. So that worked out great. On the annual leave side, and this was relatively new, anyone who might have lost vacation time last year due to the virus because they couldn't use their normal carryover limits, or couldn't use their normal use or lose leave and were subject to carryover limits. The typical use or lose, or I should say the ceiling for people who run into use or lose categories, you can carry over 240 hours in most years. If you're overseas, up to 360. What this increase in annual leave ceilings did is it gave you an additional 90 hours that could be forgiven from the use or lose clause. So in other words, if I was sitting on use or lose leave at the end of the year and couldn't use up quite all of it, I'm forgiven an additional 90 hours, which means if I had a 240 hour leave ceiling, then you can add 90 hours to that. Actually, it was increased from 240 to 350. And if you had a 360 hour leave ceiling by virtue of having spent time overseas, it could go up as high as 360 to give you time to travel, et cetera, and so forth, increased to 450 hours. Now, the critical aspect of this additional leave is that it has to be used this year in 2021. And agencies, before they even use this clause, and I'll tell you what it is at the end, it's part of the defense, I'll tell you now, it's actually part of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2021. And if you're really wonkish and want to get into the section that provides it, National Defense Authorization Act 2021, and the section is 1111, and it describes all of this. You have to use the leave this year, and if you are separating, at the end of the year and thinking you can use this leave as part of your lump sum annual leave payment when you separate, you cannot. It's not part of any lump sum payments. It can only be used this year. It also does not apply to most people in the senior executive service. SES folks actually have 720-hour leave ceilings. And anyone working for a non-appropriated fund instrumentality is also not subject to this additional annual leave. So once again, it's for this year, extra 90 hours of carryover that you otherwise couldn't use last year. So you can get the opportunity to use it this year, and it absolutely cannot be used with respect to lump sum payments. Okay.
Okay.
Now, one other, I might have mentioned this earlier. Let's talk a little bit about the pay raise. That was a bit iffy for a while, but the pay raise actually became effective. It was 1% across the board for everyone in federal service. It became effective, January 5th pay period. Locality rates for 2020 remain unchanged, but there is 1% across the board raise. Military pay raise, I believe, was 3%. Not to be confused with retiree pay raises. And Bob, you and I know what those are. They're called cost of living adjustments. And there was this year for us, which became effective on December 1 of last year, but we didn't see it in our retiree pay until January 1, a 1.3% COLA, which I thought was kind of light. I mean, every time I go into the grocery store and I look at the cost of food, I think to myself, what is generating this COLA? And people, you know, the experts at the Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics say, well, it's food, it's also health, and it's also housing, the cost of rents. But the factor that tends to diminish the COLA overall tends to be the cost of fuel, gasoline. And that's remained relatively low, and it tends to suppress the other indices. 1.3%, better than nothing. Other benefits went up. These are kind of invisible to most people, but there is a lump sum death benefit that would go to a spouse if you died. That went up a little bit. Dependent children annuities went up a little, but by and large, a 1% increase for federal employees. Okay. Let's see what else happened. If you're looking to move up, this actually came from an article that I read by our dear friend, Mike Causey. Mike interviewed Kathy Troutman. Do you know Kathy, Bob?
No, I don't.
She is apparently a very astute job hunter in the federal sector. Mike refers to her as the Daniel Boone of job hunting, which I thought was kind of interesting. And we've long expected that people at the tail end of their career would be leaving. There's a huge age wave that just hasn't really happened. But according to Ms. Troutman, a lot of people could be leaving, and she's got a pretty good rationale for that. I think it's a combination of isolation and new working platforms and lack of traditional work arrangements that many of us who are senior got used to. We're longing for a little bit more freedom and travel, and when that happens, it might be time to do it, because life has proven truly to be uncertain. I mean, no one expected to be in isolation for this long due to a pandemic, and maybe it's time to start, you know, having the fun that we need. So at any rate, bottom line is there's a prediction among her and other experts that many people will finally leave federal service who are otherwise been eligible for the last 5, 10, or even 15 years, which is going to open up more opportunities for people who are just climbing the work ladder, so to speak. The administration is about to open up a lot of what are known as Schedule C political appointments. There are thousands of those jobs. And there's also an anticipation that many people will be leaving the senior executive service. The government may also take advantage of something called direct hire authority, which they always have, but that allows them essentially to go around the competitive process to put people in critical jobs. So if anyone is thinking about, you know, sticking around and moving up, this could be an exceptional year. There are so many people in the federal government now eligible to retire. And perhaps, you know, because of the pressures of the virus and other things that have been going on, they may finally seize upon the opportunity to do that. So stick around. There will be more room at the top.
With the top, now the top, not to dwell on the top, because everybody starts someplace other than, or most everybody, starts someplace else other than the top. But somebody that gets there, they generally have a lot of years of service. Am I right with that, Bob?
Absolutely. Yeah, their mandatory retirements are really relegated to just a few occupational categories: law enforcement, firefighters, air traffic controllers. There's nothing that says, particularly if you're in the career federal service, that you have to retire. So you can stick around for as long as you want. The longer you stick around, the bigger your pension is, the more you can contribute to TSP. But then I always tell people on the bottom side of that, or the other side, is you have less time to be retired and less time to do the things that you might otherwise want to do. But who knows? If you love what you're doing, stay on the job. As far as I'm concerned, you are retired.
We speak to a number of the agencies where people can leave at an earlier age, and they take with them the high three in the annuity, and they generally want to work beyond that. And so they have this great number of years of service and knowledge, and they're sought after in private industry. I guess if I was in that position, I'd have to scratch my head. Do I stay or do I go? That would be a tough one.
Absolutely. Well, when you think about it, though, if you can retire and go on to work for, you know, a contract organization, something that an organization that truly needs your skills and services, you get that pension, which is based, as you say, on high three average salary and usually a percentage or a little bit more for each year that you work. So that's going to be a nice chunk of change. You can even start drawing Social Security without effect on work. Of course, you have to wait until somewhere between 66 and 67. But if you're not working directly for the government, much the same as I've been doing work for NITP as a retired Fed, then the pension that you're receiving from the government is in no way affects the income you get from the other work. There are some people, however, who do come back to work as federal employees, classically called reemployed annuitants. You have a retirement. You come back to work for the government, you're appointed again, you're getting a pension from the Office of Personnel Management, and now you're getting a salary again, once again, from the government. In situations like that, most of the time, other than in rare ones, your salary is offset by the pension that you're getting. Now, there are exceptions to that rule, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds. They're called dual compensation waivers, where your skill set is so rare that the government is going to bring you back and pay you full salary and full pension. But those are rare. You have to literally be in a very slim to none talent pool, and they need you. And they've got the agency that wants you has to make a justification for that with the Office of Personnel Management.
So, I mean, you had a strong career with Uncle, but you didn't work till the last possible day. You left earlier, and then you went out and worked for that. We met because you worked for a consulting firm, and
yes,
somehow we hooked together there. And so, I mean, you're living proof of, okay, you can do this and somewhat call your own hours, and you get to a radio show a few times a year. How good is this?
Absolutely true. Yeah, I left the government at 49 on an early out when I still had young children, but my desire was to get back to my favorite element of HR. It's now called human capital, and which was benefits. That's the way I started. I always wanted to get back to it. And oddly enough, a major project that I worked on, which was helping to stand up the Transportation Security Administration back in the early 2000s, led to my hooking up with someone who actually was doing seminar presentations for NITP, and suggested that when I got rolled off that project, when they picked my brain dry, which is what they typically do to consultants, that I might want to come over and start doing seminars for NITP. And it's hard to believe that that was in 2006, and it was 15 years ago.
Wow.
But we go back a long ways, and it's great. I love it. I'm never gonna retire, but I am retired, so that's a bit of a paradox.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Anyway,
we digress.
We could take 4 minutes that we got left and wail the blues or sing the song. So let's sing the song, but change the record. Hotline.
That was my other phone. Sorry about that. Yeah. So maybe this is a good time to sort of sum up what we talked about.
I think so.
All right. Once again, lots of things happening for 2021. Enrollment changes during the open season. Just be mindful of the fact that those should be seen, probably already have been seen, the first pay period in January. And once again, if you're still waiting for ID cards, get in touch with your HR people, get in touch with your health plans. And if you still, don't worry about going out and getting those services, because if you have the enrollment form, there's an enrollment form called the Standard Form 2809. It's about 2 pages of enrollment and 9 pages of qualifying life events that are explained. It's an amazing application.
Okay, Bob, talking about two, we have less than 2 minutes.
Less than 2 minutes. That just hang on to that enrollment form. That's going to get you the care. Healthcare flexible spending accounts. Be mindful of the deadlines there for submitting your expenses. Take a look at TSP spillover. That's important, particularly for those people doing catch-up contributions. And just stay the course. Like Bob said, if you are climbing the ladder, you may not be at the top yet, but opportunities in government look like they're going to be broadening. Hiring opportunities to grow into new types of work. All of these things loom large together with an expected final exodus of people that are actually younger than I am now, which is hard to believe, but I always considered myself to be in that age wave, but I was the early end and I took the early out.
Okay,
so
Bob.
Lots of things coming.
Andrew's going to tell us we're going to be cut off. So, Bob, thanks. Thanks for the velvet tones. Clear representation of how things work. Andrew, thanks for keeping us alive and well. And more important, thanks everybody to listen. Bye-bye. Talk to you next week.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.